It is Thursday, May 2nd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The KUAF website giveaway is offering tickets to three of the area's largest concert festivals. You could win tickets to Rocklahoma, Wakarusa, or the country music festival Thunder on the Mountain during the month of May. Separate registration for each concert giveaway is required. Details and registration available on the web at KUAF.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the ideas behind those lights about to be turned on at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Yesterday, I talked to Leo Villarreal, the artist behind the first temporary outdoor installation at Crystal Bridges. And we'll also hear Kyle's conversation with Pat Ryan Key inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. And he'll play a couple of songs as well.
But first, Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, the current Democratic House leader and former Speaker of the House, will be at the Clinton School of Public Service today. Nikolai DePippa, Director of Public Programs at the Clinton School, says he's expecting a wide range of topics of current importance to be discussed.
We'll probably touch on what's happening on the Hill, some things that are going to be going into effect soon, including like the health care law, immigration reform, all things that everyone's reading in the newspaper or listening on the radio today.
He says the event is expected to draw a big crowd, so it's being held at the Robinson Center Exhibition Hall rather than on the Clinton School campus. Representative Pelosi has represented her congressional district in San Francisco for 25 years.
Congressman Tom Cotton of Arkansas's 4th District is taking a firmer stance on overseas U.S. military action than many other freshman Republican congressmen on Capitol Hill. Alexander Burns, a reporter for Politico, says Congressman Cotton's new position could play into a 2014 Senate run.
For folks in Washington in the Republican Party who are really focused on promoting a sort of Bush-style assertive foreign policy, Tom Cotton has stood out in the first few months of his term as just a really effective and aggressive and eager spokesman on a set of issues that a lot of people in the Republican Party are simply not talking about right now. That's why you have John McCain, Lindsey Graham, some of the Senate's leading hawks reaching out to Cotton to try to urge him into that race against Pryor.
Cotton's recent appearances on the national media scene are yet another way Burns says the congressman from Dardanelle can get noticed.
Certainly having a national audience, a national platform, is a way of gathering support from national Republican activists who are very influential in primaries. It's a way of introducing yourself to the elite fundraising community that probably doesn't keep up with the goings-on of every freshman member of Congress, but they do read conservative magazines. They do watch conservative television.
Burns says with national attention, Congressman Cotton would find it easier to carry out a successful statewide Senate campaign.
Arkansas's unemployment rate for March stayed steady from February at 7.4%, according to new numbers released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. In northwest Arkansas, the unemployment rate dropped 0.3 percentage points during the same time period, but the labor force in the Ford County area shrank to just under 235,000 people. That's a decrease of about 100 people. In the Fort Smith metro area, the unemployment rate dropped 0.6%, resulting in a 7.8% jobless rate for March. And the size of the Fort Smith region's labor force grew by about 900 people.
Arkansas's reputation as a bicycling state is improving, according to the latest League of American Cyclists rankings of bicycle-friendly states. Last year, the League ranked Arkansas 50th in the nation in bicycle friendliness. But in this year's survey, the state moved up 13 spots to 37th, the second largest jump in the country. According to a release by the League of American Cyclists, Arkansas still has room for improvement. The highest score the state received was a 3 out of 5 for legislation and enforcement. The state scored lower in the areas of policies and programs and education and encouragement, receiving scores of 2 out of 5 in both areas. And in the areas of infrastructure and planning, the state received 1 point out of 5.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are scheduled, weather permitting, to host Springfield again tonight at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Last night, the Nats fell to the Cardinals 9-3. Tonight's scheduled outdoor First Thursday activities in downtown Fayetteville have been canceled. According to a post today by event organizers, chances of rain and cold temperatures are the reasons for canceling tonight's art walk and other outdoor entertainment. Indoor gallery events on the square, however, are still scheduled to take place.
Forecast calls for rain tonight with overnight lows from 34 in northwest Arkansas to 37 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Friday, a 40% chance for rain with a high of 46 in northwest Arkansas, a 30% chance for rain and a high of 53 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow evening, chances of rain and possibly snow in May.
Snow in
I know.
May.
in May, with a low of 32 in northwest Arkansas and a chance for rain with a low of 37 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas legislature passed Act 1160 this session. The intent of the original bill, which was gutted before becoming law, was to blunt animal cruelty investigations on industrial animal farms. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, the measure reflects a growing ag-gag movement among states.
Act 1160's original intent was to provide legal protection to animal owners and their animals by ensuring that only law enforcement agencies investigate charges of animal cruelty. In the end, most of the language of the bill was stricken. What was codified was financial responsibility by the owner towards any seized animal in legal custody. Still, in a court of law, the title could potentially be referenced, according to sources at the Arkansas Legislative Bureau with whom we checked. Republican State Senator Jeremy Hutchinson, District 33 Benton, and Republican State Senator Gary Stubblefield, District 6 Branch, sponsored the bills. They declined talking on the record. Michelle Kitchens, Legislative Research Coordinator for the Arkansas Farm Bureau, says AFB was not involved with the legislation but did observe a lot of opposition to it. Still, she says, she understands the intent.
I do think that it's such a new world when you talk about technology and the number of recording devices, and it's not just something you're seeing in agriculture. You're seeing it. You're seeing laws all the time about restricting what you can video and how you can video it. The so-called peeping Tom laws. It's just your laws are catching up with your technology, so to speak. Things that people never worried about before.
But what happens behind closed doors at most animal factory farms is considered best industry management practices. Most of it not meant for public view. Egg-laying hens spend lives in battery cages. Broiler hens raised from chicks in large barns stand in layers of sawdust and manure, the air pungent with ammonia. Contract chicken catchers grab handfuls of birds to crate up for shipment. Most cattle in northwest Arkansas enjoy life on pastures grazing. But in Colorado, cattle are raised in confined feedlots. And Arkansas will soon have its first factory swine breeding farm on Newton County, where hundreds of sows will be kept in narrow metal cages through gestation and nursing. Audio from an undercover video of such an operation, posted on an NPR website taken by the group Compassion for Animals, shows piglets being castrated and tails cut using hand nippers. Again, a routine industry practice, but operators don't want consumers to know the details, says Amanda Hitt. She's a public health attorney with the Government Accountability Project based in Washington, D.C.
But that is the reality of animal agriculture. And the reality is, even with these bills designed to obscure the truth, the industry still finds itself in quite a pickle. In the end of the day, an animal dies to create that chicken nugget or that hot dog or that steak. So they're always going to have to overcome something, even if they're operating in standard operating procedures. The question becomes, should the public not get to make that choice? I suspect that most people agree that the public, the consumer, deserves to make that choice.
The nonprofit Government Accountability Project promotes corporate and government accountability by educating constituents, protecting whistleblowers, advancing occupational free speech, and empowering citizen activists. The GAP is funded through private donations and foundation grants, primarily the Ford Foundation. Amanda Hitt heads the project's food integrity campaign. She says Arkansas Act 1160 falls under a set of emerging ag-gag laws enacted so far in a dozen states. For example, some make it illegal to covertly apply for a job inside a factory farm or videotape operations like the piglet incident you just heard.
And as an attorney who represents whistleblowers within agriculture, specifically USDA inspectors, meat inspectors, I can tell you that they have told me stories of animal abuse that make these videos look like a sunny, happy Disney film.
And with factory farming being increasingly sequestered by ag-gag laws, the public won't have an opportunity to have a say in how their food is raised, Hitt says.
You know, there's certainly a movement for more humanely treated animals, healthier animals, chickens running in the field, laying eggs joyfully in big, giant hen houses. And that's what the consumer wants. But the reality is that's not what's happening in these facilities. And even when consumers do pay the premium prices for a certain type of chicken or an egg, there's a reality there that consumers are generally missing.
In findings published by the Pew Commission on Industrial Animal Farming, the authors, many of them agriculture scientists and farmers, say more humane methods ought to be adopted. For example, gassing poultry before they are killed rather than electrocuting them. But more humane methods cost money, which affects industry bottom lines and consumer pocketbooks. Still, Michelle Kitchens, Arkansas Farm Bureau Legislative Research Coordinator, says farmers always have animal welfare in mind.
Obviously, animals that are comfortable are less likely to be ill. They're less likely to be frightened. They're less stressed, which just makes them grow better, makes them, like I said, more comfortable. If you have a dairy cow that's less stressed, she's more likely to give more milk. If you have I know they've done a lot of research about how the animals perceive in a slaughterhouse, about how they perceive the slaughterhouse line, what makes them less frightened. So there is a lot of science behind how animals are managed in a CAFO situation or in the slaughter situation. That's not just in the best interest of the farmer, but in the best interest of the animal.
Ann Kitchen says we will likely see a new round of ag gag bills filed this next legislative session in Arkansas.
Just because people do feel like they're being targeted to catch that one bad act on film or on being video or sound recorded that says, we knew you were a bad farmer and we want to catch you at it. Whereas I do think it's rare. It's not in the farmer's best interest to be abusive to their animals. No matter if you have three, pigs in the backyard or, 600 pigs in a confined animal operation, it's not in their best interest to be abusive.
Plus, farmers aware of growing public interest in how their meat, milk, eggs, and poultry is raised, as well as new science on humane animal husbandry, will eventually lead to even better best management practices. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. Friday, a significant patch of land in northern Benton County will be formally dedicated as the Devil's Eyebrow Natural Area. The land borders the Indian Creek arm of Beaver Lake and includes a high selection of biodiversity. Researchers who've studied the area say there are more than 500 plant species, including about 25 that are listed in the category State Conservation Concern, and at least five of which are considered to be of global concern. Chris Colclasure is the director of the Arkansas Natural Heritage Commission and is with me from his office in Little Rock to help explain the significance of the Devil's Eyebrow and Friday's dedication. Chris, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Thanks for having me.
First, let's talk about this land. I mentioned the biodiversity. This is a rich stretch of what I guess we could call natural Ozark territory, right?
It is, and it's interesting because it's actually been studied since the 20s and 30s. It was an area that was of interest to botanists in the state, and they would go there to collect plant specimens that you couldn't find anywhere else. And then over time, even our agency, or an entity to prelude our agency, was interested in it, and it's actually incorporated in a 1974 natural areas plan, where the site is documented as having rich biological diversity. So it's always been of interest to the botanical world, and it's just recently become available, and we were able to consolidate funds and work with partners to try to acquire the property on behalf of the state.
I know that the at least five plants that are considered of global concern, it's interesting to preserve them, but just the names alone, Mackenzie's Wild Rye, Church's Wild Rye, and my favorite, Ozark Corn Salad.
Yes.
Those are some great names.
And most of these plants, the interesting thing about Devil's Eyebrow is because there's so much relief, you have some very high relief with the glades and the bluffs and hilltops. And then as you go down into the very rich and moist stream bottoms, you have a lot of variation, geology, temperature. And so that's why we see so much plant diversity there. And most of the plants that occur there are glade species or bluff species. And just that sort of habitat type, there's not as much of it left. Or if it is, it's been highly degraded, either in the absence of fire, it's been covered in cedars, or has just been totally used in a different manner. So to find a piece that's intact, like Devil's Eyebrow, is a rare opportunity, and it's significant because it houses all these rare species.
How was the property gained?
Well, we actually started working on it back in 2010, doing just some preliminary investigations, going back through our records. The Natural Heritage Commission houses all of the rare species records for the state, so we track all the rare plants and animals. We do a lot of inventory, because if you're going to conserve the natural diversity of the state, you have to know what's rare and what's not. So we started with just going back and looking at all of our records, and then after that, we started doing inventory trips with permission from the landowners. And then over time, just working through the negotiation process, we actually asked that the Nature Conservancy step in and buy it on our behalf and hold it till we could consolidate all of the needed funding. And that's where we were working with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission and folks like the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and Walmart, and till we could consolidate enough funds to make an acquisition.
So what will the future of this natural area be? Will the public be allowed to see part of it? How will that work?
Yes. One, it will be incorporated into the Game and Fish Commission's Wildlife Management Area system, and it will be a unit of the Beaver Lake Wildlife Management Area, which is a cooperative project between the Game and Fish Commission and the Corps of Engineers. This will be, like I said, a separate unit, over 1,900 acres that will be available. That regulation process as far as public hunting and all of that is ongoing right now, so that will be finalized moving towards the summer. As far as the public and just going to visit, we will have a parking area, which is where we will be having the dedication ceremony this Friday. And over time, we will work on trails and things of that nature to allow the public more access. Right now, there are several historic roads that are on the property that were used by the previous landowners. So those can be used as ways to funnel the public in and out of the property. But we have greater plans moving on into the future as far as trails.
Finally, I've been told that this is a great place in the winter to go see bald eagles. Is that true?
That is true, and I have personally not been there to see them, but it is one of the favorite spots just by talking to locals and neighbors and even some of our partners at the Corps. The Indian Creek arm of Beaver Lake is a very popular place to go watch eagles roost, and they roost in and on the property that we have just acquired. So I know that the locals were excited for us to be able to acquire it and keep it in its natural state so that, one, the eagles won't be disturbed and that people can still go there and enjoy that magnificent bird.
Chris Koclasier is the director of the Arkansas Natural Heritage Commission. He'll be participating in the official dedication of the Devil's Eyebrow Natural Area Friday morning. Chris, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
One day, Sugata Mitra took a computer and he stuck it in a wall in a neighborhood in New Delhi.
Just to see what would happen if I gave a computer to children who never would have one, didn't know what the internet was.
And the results? Well, in 9 months, those kids
would reach the same standard as an office secretary in the West.
Untaught learning, next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Sunday at noon on KUAF.
You may be familiar with Leo Villarreal's work. He's the guy that designed the $10 million Bay Lights project on the San Francisco Bay Bridge that was turned on in March. The lights that line the concourse connecting the east and west buildings of the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. are his work. as well as the Bleecker Street subway station in New York City. Villarreal uses LED lights, technology, and custom computer programming in his site-specific designs. His work can now be seen at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. Buckyball is the first temporary outdoor installation for the museum. The project gets its name from Buckminster Fuller, a 20th century architect and creator of a geodesic dome, from which Villarreal got his inspiration. The sculpture will officially be illuminated today. I spoke with Villarreal yesterday, before he gave a lecture on the work. I began by asking him how the piece, originally designed for and commissioned by Madison Square Park Conservancy in New York City, fits into the very different landscape of Crystal Bridges.
Well, the piece was originally conceived for a very urban environment right in the center of Manhattan in a wonderful park surrounded by skyscrapers. But for me, it's really thrilling to see it in a completely different context and see the work, the way the work can travel. And, you know, here it's presented in nature and it's visible, you know, from a very long distance, which it wasn't in New York, you know, at the end of a field and right at the entrance to this wonderful museum. So I'm really thrilled. And judging from people's responses as we've been testing, you know, there's just kind of a excitement and everyone wants to know what it is. And it's really attracting so many people. And that's great. Very exciting for me.
I was thinking, I watched a video of the changing lights and the colors and whatnot, and there was music to it. And as you were talking about how this was designed for skyscrapers, the sound is very different. The sounds out here are much different than downtown New York City.
Absolutely. I mean, and here, just hearing the incredible soundscape of the crickets and frogs, and that's a wonderful sound as well. And I couldn't help but make relationships between what I was hearing and what I was seeing. You know, it's a different thing that I'm you know, excited to spend more time watching and listening to.
When you were approached by Madison Square Park to, you were commissioned to do this piece, how did you come up with the idea? Did you know of a buckyball? How did you know that was what you wanted to do?
Well, I've been working with geometry from pretty much the beginning of my making my light sculpture. So I've always had an interest in that. And I remember seeing my first buckyball in the Science Times of the New York Times and noted the form, and it was intriguing to me, the interaction of the hexagon and the pentagon, and that it was also dimensional. It was a sphere. And that's generally the trend that, you know, I've been seeing in my work is moving more towards sculpture and getting off the wall and starting to really engage with space. So the buckyball seemed like the perfect form to explore.
Well, you mentioned that you've always worked with geometry. Were you first kind of into math and technology before you were into art, or was it kind of vice versa?
I started out in art and studying sculpture. I mean, I'd always been interested in technology from my early days with an Apple II Plus computer. And for me, it's really about art first and using these amazing tools to create art. So I use software that's all customized and to generate the sequences that I'm making. So I'm very deeply involved in developing a lot of this, you know, very technical stuff. But that's what I need to do in order to create my work.
How is technology and computer programming, how is that art?
Well, it's you know, it's just another tool. Like, it just happens to be very contemporary. And I think artists have always been attracted to new tools and new technology. What I'm doing is connecting software with light. So I'm not presenting things on a screen or as a projection in the way that you would show a lot of new media work. I'm dealing directly with light, which has the ability to be very impactful and to have a strong, you know, really engage a viewer's sensorium. So that's what I love about art, is the impact of it.
Mentions computer programming. How long did it take to program the buckyball to change into so many different colors? I mean, it's how many colors? 16 million. Wow.
So we have the form of the buckyball, but it's lined with LED tubes, and within the tubes there are red, green, and blue LEDs. And I can make every 1.2 inches of the tubes a different color, any of 16 million colors. So that's the range that I have to work with. So I'm moving light around the sphere. In order to do that, I had to create custom tools that allow me to create those color combinations and sequences. So I did a lot of that beforehand, and then had to sit in front of the piece in Madison Square Park for, I had a week to really work on it. and to tune it, because it's really about being present with the piece and tuning it.
So is the tune here at Crystal Bridges, is it different than what people saw at Madison Square Park?
There have been some subtle differences. I've had a couple of nights here to work with the piece and to make some adjustments, which I'm not sure if anyone will really notice, anyone besides me. But it's always great to be able to revisit a piece and to see how it can evolve.
Well, you mentioned night, and so it's a light thing. So obviously it's easier seen at night. But I stopped by on my way in, and it's on. I mean, I could notice the lights changing, even in this very, very bright sunlight that we're in. Do you intend for viewers to see it during the day also? Or, you know, how is it different, the viewing?
Well, I think one thing I'm pleased with is that the buckyball is it's a beautiful sculpture and form, even without the lights on, and that's important to me, is that it look good at all times. But the piece is a light sculpture, and it's hard to compete with the sun. So it's best viewed starting at, you know, 8 p.m., and it'll be on until 10:30 p.m. each night. During the day, the piece is on and doing a very simple sequence using white light. Sort of, we call it thinking mode, where it's saying that it's on and active, but it's not as impactful as it is certainly in the evening. So it really comes to life as it gets darker.
So I know that when I was watching a video of it, I wasn't in New York while it was there, but you know, it kind of puts you in a trance a little bit, kind of mesmerizing a little bit. What is the intended, I guess, feeling that you're trying to evoke in people that are viewing it?
All my work is abstract. I'm not dealing with images or text. So I'm interested in rules and underlying structures and in working with the form. But I think that a lot of the sequences do have a lot of personality, and they feel very much alive, and it's exciting to watch them and try and decode them. The brain can't help but pattern recognize. That's how we're hardwired to do that. So we're getting some information. We want to make sense of it, but it doesn't quite resolve. And it's also highly subjective. Everyone will see something different in the piece. But I think it's operating in the way that a you know, fire would. And sometimes I've referred to my pieces as digital campfires. So there's this communal aspect. And in the way that you'd want to be near a fire, you want to be near the buckyball, because it's ambient and it's doing something and it's pleasurable to be with. And it's also nice to be able to share that experience. And that's why I built these zero gravity couches that surround the buckyball, so people can have a place to recline and to really spend some time with the piece.
A lot of you earlier when we were in the conversation, you mentioned getting things off the wall. And so a lot of your pieces are very site specific. I mean, you have the Bay Lights, the Bleecker Street. So you're taking a place that doesn't have anything and you're adding something to it. What are people's comments on how you've changed the atmosphere of a place?
Well, for me, my interest is in augmenting and adding something and working with the systems that are already at work, whether it's architecture or landscape. And all the inspiration for the sequencing comes from the site and the kinetic activity around. So I'm kind of creating, the pieces become almost like mirrors and somehow reflect on where they are. So that's my general intention. I think that what's been interesting for me is to see the universal quality that the pieces have. Anyone can look at it and engage, because light is something that we all have a, you know, very strong relationship with and have, can have some response to. So I think that there's an ability to access a very large audience. You know, that's certainly thrilling for me.
Just really quickly, have you ever been to Northwest Arkansas before? And what do you think of our museum here?
Now, I've never been to Arkansas. This is my first trip. The closest I've been is Kansas City, where I did a piece several years ago. I'm thrilled to be here and to discover this museum, which is just extraordinary. The quality of the art and the architecture and the spirit of the institution is very inspiring in the way that it seeks to really broaden the audience for art. And I think it's very much aligned with my dedication to public art.
Leo Villarreal's Buckyball can be viewed near the entrance to Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville on the Orchard Trail over the coming months. I spoke with the artist yesterday at the museum before he gave a lecture on the work. This is Ozarks at Large. Thank you. Join KUAF for a countrywide live cinecast of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me later today at the Razorback Theater in Fayetteville. It's Peter and Carl on the big screen with Paula Poundstone, Tom Baudet, and Mo Rocca, plus celebrity guest Steve Martin and soul act Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings as the house band. Tickets and more information about today's show can be found at KUAF.com.
Pat Ryan Key didn't have a master plan for other people to hear his music, but other people are hearing it now. He's part of the trio I Do Declare, along with Austin Smith and Taylor Smith, a band now playing well beyond its Rogers roots at venues in cities like Little Rock and St. Louis. And he's also playing solo acoustic gigs, including at tomorrow night's Sow Your Seed Party, kicking off the latest submission season for the Offshoot Film Festival. Before he plays at that party at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville tomorrow night, we invited him to the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
I've been out of school for a year. I just graduated and, you know, went out in the professional workforce, and I felt like there was something missing, you know, with school. It takes up so much of your time, and all of a sudden it's gone. You get bored easily, and I just moved in with my old friend and who became our bassist in the band eventually. He had all this recording equipment, and it was really kind of just sitting gathering dust, and so we started, you know, he taught me how to use it, and then it kind of just hit the ground running from there, and then it kind of became its own monster, and we were both so excited about it, we kind of just said, well, you know, let's try to keep this going, you know, and then after the, I started in the summer of 2010, and then we released the record in January of 2011, and we're still flowing off its momentum.
So, and now in I Do Declare, it's you and Austin,
mm-hmm.
who you mentioned.
Yes.
And Taylor.
Yes, sir.
Drummer.
Our drummer, Taylor. And it was quite a different experience starting it, because my only intention was to record. You know, I always wanted to be playing music, but it takes so much time, and I was, you know, leery of having to work and trying to have a social life. You know, how could I fit music in there? But if I could write and do it on my own time, I thought, you know, hey, that would be cool. And then when I released the record, at the time, I had recorded all the instruments. I didn't have any contacts or any other friends that were involved in the music, because I was just a businessman at the time, you know. And one of the songs started being played on a local radio program quite frequently, and then all of a sudden I'd start getting a demand for needing a band. And so I was sitting there left scratching my head, you know, and I asked Austin, you know, the time, and I got Taylor, and then we just started playing. It was playing every couple months and once a month, and now it's weekly, knock on wood.
You were named, right, at the NAMAs in 2012 as the best new artist?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it looks like you'll be the last best new artist, because the NAMAs don't happen anymore.
As unfortunate as that is for the NAMAs, that is quite an honor. You know, growing up here and kind of being a secret musician, if you will, you know, you kind of always look up to all the people in there. And then to be named the first year we got to even start playing, you know, and even nominated was quite an honor, because it's not the players, it's the business side of it, you know, the promoters and the bar owners and, you know, all those people. To catch wind of I Do Declare was such a shock, you know, because I didn't think that we were even at a place of importance, you know, and then to be named, man, we were all just so flabbergasted. It was really, really neat.
Well, I Do Declare has an electronic and a plugged-in sort of sound, but mm-hmm. you're acoustic today.
Yeah, when I started playing with the band, you know, you rely on a distortion pedal. If you make a mistake, oh, well, the buzz will cover it up. People won't hear that and stuff. But if you're playing acoustic, you make a mistake, it's right there, clear as day. And I wanted to play acoustic as a challenge to make myself better, because, you know, there's so many people in the music scene here that are just phenomenal. You know, you got Isaiah Warford and Russ Hutchison. Those guys are considered veterans, you know, playing here. And you come up there and you're trying to do some tricks, and, you know, you wouldn't be able to do it right, you know. So I'm kind of hard on myself, and playing acoustic was definitely an experience. And that's kind of what helped propel the rest of the things, you know, because you see with the band and you see me playing the acoustic, And it was kind of more of a branding opportunity to bring the band out more in the front light and stuff, which it worked, thankfully. But it's something that also very humbling, because if you do make a mistake, you know, you got to make sure to do better the next song.
It's right there. Well, can we experience some of the acoustic here?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
What would you like to play?
Well, I'm going to play an original song we wrote about an old childhood friend called Travis. It's actually funny, another friend that I grew up with helped me write this song. He came to me, his name's Pat Callison, and he's like, here, I wrote this part. And it was in band practice, one of the first band practices we ever had. And man, it just opened something up in my head, and I wrote the chorus, and we wrote the words and melody. So it's a little tribute to Travis, because he was kind of a little pain in our butts in the beginning, but now he's turned into a really good guy, and we still remember all the stories, and so it's all she wrote.
What's the name of the song?
It's called Travis.
Oh, okay.
All righty. Travis, it's for you, buddy.
Waking up, he's around, window knocking, hear about now. Have you heard? It's the word, 7 a.m. knocking, I hear him now. May I have one? No, I said some. May I have one? I said some. Oh. Star is shown. May I have one? No, I said so. May I have one? No, I said so.
That's great.
You liked it?
I did. I liked it a lot. You mentioned that you graduated from college, went into a professional life.
I graduated in 2009, completely different than music and accounting. And then I quickly learned that I didn't like accounting and went into supply chain, more like logistics and merchandising. And that's really fun, you know. You still get to mess with numbers and stuff. I've always liked numbers, so... Anybody can challenge me at Sudoku. I got you at that. But playing guitar and getting that back into it, it took away a lot of the things that I thought I used to be stressed about or I would worry about, you know, because I was finally doing something that I enjoyed. I didn't feel like I was doing something because it was expected. And having that kind of creative release has brought a lot of sense of content and joy in life again. Not that I was a sad guy, I just wasn't doing the things that I always wanted to do, and now that I'm able to do this and have fun with it and be recognized for it, you know, has made it that much more sweet. You know, I never want to stop like I did before. I thought I was doing the right thing, and you know, it may have been, school taught me a lot about myself, but something about playing guitar and actually being able to do it for, you know, for other people makes it that much more worthwhile.
Do you mind playing one more song?
Absolutely. You don't have to ask me twice.
Okay. what do you think you'll do here?
I was wanting to do a little Johnny Cash song.
Ooh.
You think
don't have
well?
To, yeah, you don't have to ask me twice for that.
All right. I could do that.
All
I
right.
Got some harmonica too.
Excellent.
Sure, it's all over here. Play Ring of Fire. It's a burning thing that makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And I burned, burned, burned. That ring of fire, that ring of fire. Into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And I burned, burned, burned. That ring of fire, that ring of fire. The taste of love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I fell for you just like a child. Oh, but the fire went wild. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And I burned, burned, burned. That ring of fire, that ring of fire. And I burned, burned, burned. That ring of fire, that ring of fire.
Thank you.
Oh, man, thank you.
We should mention that you'll be playing for the Seedling.
The Seedling Film Association. It's going to be a really nice event. It's a fundraiser to bring awareness to the agricultural field, and we're encouraged to dress in farmer's attire. So I'm going to have my cowboy boots. It's going to be cool. I'm going to be playing from 8 to 8:30, and they have a lot of activities signed up, and then right after that, I'll be a block down the street at the Dixon Street Pub. If anybody has some free time after that, you should come over and enjoy yourself.
So what time will that be?
That will be from 8:30 to midnight. So I'll be there quite a while.
All right, Pat, thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Will you come back sometime?
Absolutely.
All right.
You say when.
Okay, thank you. Pat Ryan Key visited the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this week. As he mentioned, he'll play at tomorrow night's Sow Your Seed Party for the Seedling Film Festival at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. That's tomorrow night. The event is from 8 until 11. You can learn more about the Seedling Film Association at seedlingfilm.com. And you can find out much more and hear more from Pat's band, I Do Declare, at their site, idodeclaremusic.com. And keep an eye on that website because the band's first ever music video should appear there soon. This is Ozarks at Large.
Coming up on Ask Me Another, NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia, author A.J. Jacobs reveals the little bits of wisdom that stay with you when you read the entire encyclopedia.
Like, I remember that Rene Descartes had a fetish for cross-eyed women. That's the stuff that sticks in there.
Join me, Ophira Eisenberg, for NPR's Guiltiest and Most Puzzling Pleasure.
Ask Me Another, Saturday morning at 11 here on KUAF.
It is May 2nd, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We're pleased to have Jody Beznoska, Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center, back with us.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy Artist Fair weekend.
It is that indeed.
Yes, it sure is. So much going on. Where do we start?
Let's start with...
Tonight?
Yes.
That's what I was going to say.
Tonight, yes. Mm-hmm. Tonight, we have a gallery opening happening in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery. We will have our guest curator, Andrea Packard, there. She will be talking us through the new exhibition there, which is called Untamed. It's worth coming down to this, at the very least, just to go into the lobby at Walton Arts Center and see the leaping... African animals from Tasha Lewis, who's another artist.
I saw a picture you posted on Facebook yesterday.
They're really
it
neat.
Looks really cool.
They're jumping through the whole lobby, and they'll lead you right into the gallery where you can see the new artwork. So the gallery talk is at 6 o'clock tonight, I believe, and the reception is 5 to 7. It's free and open to the public.
Excellent.
That's tonight. Tomorrow night we will have Jungle Jack Hannah at the Walton Arts Center. I believe if that isn't sold out, it is almost sold out. So very few tickets left for that. And we will also be at First Friday tomorrow evening in Bentonville with 4 different acts of entertainment up there. Carter Sampson, who is a fabulous singer-songwriter. The Brickfields Duo, also a fabulous group from Northwest Arkansas. Jamie Stone, who is an amazing banjo player.
Who we tentatively have scheduled to be on the show tomorrow.
Yay!
Yeah.
Not from Arkansas. All I believe he's from Canada. And then we will also have the Dinosaur Petting Zoo roaming about. And the Dinosaur Petting Zoo has been here at the Arts Center since yesterday. They will be doing shows for kids for the next couple of days. And then they will be taking their dinosaur puppets out and roaming the streets. And I saw the T-Rex. He's big.
It should be. I mean, I'd be a little disappointed if he wasn't.
Yeah. So they will be at First Friday as well. So it's going to be we're all crossing our fingers that the weather holds off and that we have a good night for all those artists.
Now, Saturday.
Yes.
In conjunction with Spring Fest, you've got Trail Mix.
We have Trail Mix in Fayetteville.
Now, you've broached the subject of weather.
Mm-hmm.
There is a weather date for Trail Mix, mm-hmm. which would be Sunday. When would people know whether Trail Mix is happening Saturday or not?
That's going to be a call that is made pretty close
early
to the start
Saturday
time.
Morning.
Yeah, it'll probably be Saturday morning. If we decide to make that call, it's probably going to be Saturday morning. So we would post it on our website. We would put it up on Facebook. We would put it up on, out there on Twitter and hope that everybody finds it that way. So that's on Saturday. Busy, busy day on Saturday. We will have Trail Mix in Fayetteville from 10 to noon, also in Bentonville from 3 to 5. Spring Fest is happening all day down here in Fayetteville, and then the Foam Fest will be happening in the parking lot across from Walton Arts Center. I actually don't know the time on that.
5 to 8.
Okay,
I think so,
in the evening then.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Old Crow Medicine Show
at the
with Three Penny Acre opening will be at the Amp.
I did want to say that I went to Trail Mix, not last year, but the year before.
Yeah.
And it was chilly, and it was cloudy, but it was still a good time.
It was still great.
I mean, it wasn't raining.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't,
just want to throw that out there, that it was still a good time, even though it was chilly and cloudy.
So, great bands. It's going to be really fun. Monday, we will have, let me make sure I get my schedule right. Monday is Jamie Stone at Thorn Crown Chapel in Eureka Springs. So he's the banjo player we mentioned before. That is going to be awesome. And then Tuesday the 7th is Three Penny Acre with Gregory Alan Isakov at Cooper Chapel.
And you
pretty sure that's almost sold out.
You'd better check because last week there weren't many, and I think it might be any of those concerts that are at Thorn Crown or Cooper Chapel. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking about going, check now because it's limited seating and they go fast.
They do. And then we will move ahead to the following weekend where we have some great children's and theater program for kids and their families. On the 11th of May, we have 3 performances in Star Theater of a show called Boats by Terrapin Puppet Theater. They are, I believe, from Australia. And Boats is this wonderful little intimate story for little kids. It's designed for them about 2 mariners who go on adventures together. And it's puppets. A wonderful way to introduce your kids to the theater. Tickets are $5. So no real reason not to bring your kids out on Saturday. And then, let's see, on the 12th at 2 o'clock, which is a Sunday, we're going on a bear hunt.
Which on Walton Arts Center's webpage says is infant friendly.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
There are a couple of shows on our season that are infant-friendly. Basically, that means if you have a child under the age of two, you can bring them in and they can sit on your lap without a ticket.
Oh, okay.
A lot of times when we have kids programs, we actually have to have that child have a ticket for what for sometimes for safety reasons, sometimes because of the rules with the company. Okay. But a show like Bear Hunt, you know, so if you have a kid who's four or five and you have an infant and you all want to go to the theater, you can bring the baby and keep the baby with you because it's not going to disturb anybody else because the theater is going to be full of kids. On the 16th, The Price is Right will be at Walton Arts Center. Not Drew Carey, not an actual production of the show, of the TV show, but you will actually play. People will play games. People will win prizes. It'll be the thing. It'll be the whole Price is Right. And, in and amongst all of this, we have some partnership activities going on with Clubhouse Fitness related to Artisphere. They're doing yoga and fitness challenges, theming along with that. You can get info on that on the website. And then let's look ahead to War Horse.
Which is late May.
Which is late May, May 22nd through the 26th. We're starting to see video and previews and things about it, and it's just fantastic. Such a different show. This is going to be a different experience than people have had on the Broadway series at Walton Arts Center. This will be a play. There is music. But I don't know that we have had a puppetry show on this scale before. So that's going to be really exciting.
Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.
Jody Beznoska is Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Those sounds take us back to a time called spring.
Right.
It was yesterday.
80 degrees and sunny yesterday.
Right. Antoinette Grajeda went up on the University of Arkansas campus, and they were having a spring festival with games. And she went in search of a fried Snickers, but got there too late. The fried Snickers were already gone.
Oh, no.
But this is what a carnival in spring sounds like. It was yesterday on the University of Arkansas campus. Good timing for them.
Yes.
Because yesterday was very carnival weather.
Today, not so much.
No. Although, you know what? I'm betting college students and free fried food, they would have still had a grout.
You're probably right.
But it just seems like if you're going to eat a fried Snickers, you should have short sleeves on rather than a parka.
Agreed.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, will present its season finale, a John Williams tribute concert, Saturday, May 18th at 7:30 p.m. at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. SONA musicians and singers will perform highlights from movies like Schindler's List, Star Wars, E.T., Jaws, Harry Potter, and more. Tickets available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Buckeye.
Buckeye?
Yes.
Where is Buckeye, Arkansas?
Buckeye, it's in between Goshen and Huntsville. It's actually on highway... near Highway 295, which actually runs north and south. But
okay, well, I've driven through it.
You probably
I just don't
have.
Remember. Is there still a sign? Is it one of these places that still has a sign?
I hope so.
A story I've always wanted to do, and I will do it before the end of my days on this planet, is what's the evolution of a community disappearing and then losing the sign? When my family first moved to Arkansas, there was a place between Midway and Three Brothers, all right, already kind of remote, called Arkawana. Nothing left there except the green sign that said Arkawana. Mm-hmm. Not welcome to, not population, just like here's the spot. Then at some point that sign went away. And I think if you look on the map now, Arkawana doesn't even appear on the map.
Like we'll it have has to look.
So I would be interested who with the state says, okay, like snow in Marion County still has a sign.
But why? Nobody's there.
Well, there are a few people there, but it's not, you know, it's not Salesville. You know, it's not Sonora, it's snow. And so finding out how those towns stay on the map.
You know, literally. I was in a small town last weekend.
Where were you?
Gilbert.
Gilbert is a small town.
Yeah, but it's population of like 33.
Yeah.
And fun fact, they're actually celebrating their centennial this weekend.
Really?
Yes.
Well, happy birthday, Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That sounds like a musical from the 50s. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Happy centennial weekend to all the folks in Gilbert. Antoinette Grajeda will be with me tomorrow.
Happy Thursday.